You know what's kind of a segue directly to our history of watching wrestling and even broadcasting it a little bit is the great Harpo's facility that you and I spent many hours at. Maybe not the clientele for wrestling shows being great, but the facility itself was. One of my heroes on a business level, Eddie Allman, who ran the place, he managed to get Vince to buy him out of WWF New York before the ship hit the iceberg. Him and his partner at the time, Eddie Allman, and they were the guys in business with Vince on WWF New York. And Vince, like toward the end, was like, you know, damn it, I'm going to buy you out and run it myself. And that's when it went under.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Wow.
That's how he afforded the Great Harpo's facility there, I'm pretty sure. I might be getting this completely wrong, but I think that's where he got the money for the Harpo's upgrade. Never knew that?
No, I'm in shock right now. I almost want to do a different podcast about Harpo's now. Wow, I didn't know that.
I thought you would enjoy that. Yeah, I may be getting some of the details wrong, but I do know that Eddie and his partner at the time were bought out by Vince before it hit the iceberg.
Okay, well,
so, yeah.
Well, I have one note.
What?
Before we get into the Rumble match itself, was the use of Kid Rock's Cocky, the video package going
okay.
to this. I thought, you know, is stupid as it kind of was, I sort of laugh how, if anyone remembers that song.
I'll pop for any use of Kid Rock.
Yeah, I'm not going to go that far. There's a few uses of Kid Rock and a few things he said that I don't agree with.
I'm down with all Kid Rock.
But
I celebrate his entire catalog, as the saying goes.
I'll tell you what, I think after this, I don't know anything from his catalog, and I'm proud to say that. But so the song Cocky, it's like, they say I'm cocky, and you say what? And they kept splicing Steve Austin's what in there. And it was sort of funny, to be honest. It was sort of funny. But anyway, the Rumble match itself, you mentioned this to me, and I think it's true. This is one of the more star-studded Rumbles that
yes.
we'd had in some
The most in 10
time.
Years since the vaunted 92 Rumble.
And it's not close to 92, we should
no.
point out. 92 is the most star-studded.
But
this
is like on a par with maybe 1990 and in the years of the last boom, but leading up to it.
So we're in agreement as we've gone through the years doing this that the best Rumbles are the ones when the roster's strong and you have
yes.
a lot of possible. Now, we all kind of knew Triple H was going to win here.
Right.
But you had some other big names. You had Undertaker, who was getting a big push as a heel, which I'm going to talk about momentarily. You had Kurt Angle. You had Austin, obviously.
Yeah.
So it was strong. I mean, there was some fodder in here, to say the least, which we'll talk about. I think the middle part of this match certainly drags. One thing I found interesting here, though, was the nostalgia,
mm-hmm.
quote-unquote, that was used. They brought back four names from, quote-unquote, the past. Goldust, Val Venus, Godfather, and Mr. Perfect. Now, Perfect, in the case, it was the distant past. In the case of the other three, they were like 2 years removed from being on TV. It wasn't exactly like, oh my God, I've forgotten so much about these guys. It was kind of like, yeah, we just sort of let them, you know, to be honest with you, I mean, Venus and Godfather, they had been in Right to Censor the year previous.
Right.
And, you know, that just ran its course. They just brought them back with their more successful and well-known gimmicks.
But again, though, see, and that's the thing. I mean, and again, and I'm a guy to kind of, you know, we talked about it before. I am era dependent as far as how I look at stuff. And, like, to me, you know, I'm not going to sit here and argue that those are the greatest talents in the world. But it sort of gives me the warm and fuzzies. At a time when I was turning on the product, it's comfort food. That's how I look at it.
Okay, well, here's my issue with...
So it worked for me.
It did not for me in the case of Goldust, Venus, and Godfather. I'm not going to tell you, and I'm going to say this.
Mm-hmm.
It could have worked. Based on what you said.
Well, Goldust was like pre-Glory days, so I kind of got into more of
it
the
It has
guys.
Nothing to do with that. For
me, it's I want
me,
to see the Attitude
those are
guys back.
All right,
give
look,
me the Attitude Era back, damn it.
Okay. There is no disputing that those three, Goldust, Venus, and the Godfather,
right.
were characters that got over in the past. We're not disputing that.
Right.
Okay? And we're not disputing the fact that they have a certain amount of value in being brought back.
Right.
Over, you know... I mean, certainly you care more about any of those guys coming up than, like, Billy and Chuck or Scotty Too Hotty in this thing, right?
That's right.
Here's my issue. You bring them back, and it was kind of hyped, too.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of hyped in the sense that they had this really nice video package to start this pay-per-view,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, some guys are coming back and stuff like that. And, you know, it was something that they hyped.
Right.
But, Rick Morris, they're brought back and are treated totally insignificantly. Goldust, he comes out early. He's like number two, and he gets kind of a run. He's in there for 13 minutes.
But the Godfather comes in in the middle of the match. It was kind of a dead part of the match, so it was a good time to bring him in. But they do the whole thing with the Ho train and stuff, and people are, like, popping for it. And he's, like, thrown out, like, right away after it. So it's like, why did you bring the guy back? Val Venus got a similar treatment. He was only in this thing for, like, 3 minutes.
Well,
so you're doing this thing where they come back. If you're going to bring him back, at least, like, have him stay in. They do this all the time with, remember there was that era, I don't know if they did it last year.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think they did do it. Yeah, they did do it this past year, the 2015 Rumble. Like, Bubba Dudley came back. So they bring these guys back. It's a surprise.
They did it with Nash in 2011.
Yeah, and some of the things, it's a surprise. Here it wasn't a surprise. They hyped them ahead of time. But people, like, get into it, and then they're thrown out quickly. That makes no sense to me.
Well, here's the thing,
too. And I'm not saying that they should have won or been there at the end, but at least get mileage out of bringing them back. It's like crack booking. It's like, okay, you know, nothing's going on, so let's just have these people pop for like 2 minutes over the Godfather. Okay, now he's gone. Let's bring on something else to pop him for. It's like crack-induced booking.
I'm looking at the list of participants, and this is a name that I don't remember. If he was on the roster in 2000 and 2001, I don't remember a damn thing he was doing. Big Boss Man. That's another guy that came back for this, right?
I don't think he'd come back. I think he was around.
What was he doing during the invasion? Quick, tell me, Kyle Ross. See?
I don't know. Jesus. You didn't even give me a chance to answer. Here, let me look here. Let me click on him. Tell you what he was doing exactly. I don't know what he was doing.
He wasn't.
I know he was probably bossing people around. Man, is he big.
I don't think he was there.
But okay, hold on.
That's another example of somebody because
he entered the 2000 Rumble match.
Okay.
He teamed with Bull Buchanan in 2000.
Okay.
In the summer of 2000, Boss Man disappeared from WWF's primary television shows, wrestling mainly on Jacked and Heat, where he had a minor feud with Crash Holly until suffering legit injury in 2001. He returned late in 2001. He formed a team with Booker T after Vince ordered him to be Booker's enforcer. I don't remember that at all.
I don't either.
But here's the thing. He got hurt. So he was still technically employed.
Okay.
You're right.
Okay.
You're right. It wasn't like he was a main part of the storylines, but he was not. He had been under contract
the
whole time.
Very interesting career trajectory because they never really referenced it much during the Attitude Era, but he's one of the only guys they had there who was a key part of the first Boom Era. I mean, not one of the top five stars of it, but somebody who was prominent during the first Boom and was quasi-prominent in the second Boom. Just an interesting career arc. But, so I'm using him as an example of guys who were brought back. Al Snow, I don't think, was continuously used on TV.
Well, nor should he have been. He's terrible. Everything Al Snow says is terrible. And you showed me something before we started recording that, again, made me wonder why anyone would listen to anything else.
The Giant was the greatest match at WrestleMania 3 because it drew the house.
Dave Meltzer's a worker. Al Snow's an idiot. I want everyone to know, Al Snow is I'm going to say this right now, and I don't give a damn if this is your intellectual property. Al Snow is a piece of shit. Okay?
I got to get him back on the show and have you ambush him. Actually, I've never
I'm
had
sure
him.
He remembers
I've
me.
Never
I'm sure,
had
I'm
him
sure.
On the, I don't want to say back on the show. The only place you ever talked to him was on SNS. I got to get him on the show.
Yeah, where he claimed the Red Rooster was a successful gimmick.
Yeah,
this guy's an ass.
But didn't who agreed with you then? Somebody, wasn't it Lance Storm that agreed with you? Somebody came on afterwards. I don't remember who it was.
I can't either. I was stoned the entire time.
Somebody agreed with
Should have. Do you know who else agreed with me?
Who?
Any other human being who had ever watched the Red Rooster.
Any sentient human being.
Yes.
That's right.
Anyone who just didn't want to like hate internet fan just for the sake of it.
Pretty much.
Al Snow, you're a tool. I'm glad you got eliminated here.
Another name that was in this thing here, and he was around at the end, and we haven't really talked about him much because he didn't come over as part of the WCW group. He came in. He was the breakout guy from the ECW group, but didn't really get the. He got a glass ceiling put on him, unfortunately. It was Rob Van Dam. But that's a guy that the crowd was really still behind in this time.
Oh, and he got screwed here.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, I mean, he comes in at the end, and he, like, eats a pedigree, like, right away.
Yeah.
And just get. And Booker T throws about, like.
212. That's
they,
how long
they
he was in.
Cut his legs off
yep.
as soon as he got in. He was one of those guys that Triple H just didn't seem to like and was going to hold down. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't there.
He was in the middle of a franchise face push. Of course he looked at Rob Van Dam as
yeah,
a
so
threat.
It was kind of like, oh, we're not going to let this guy intrude on my babyface coronation. And I have, you know, kind of written down here, in my notes, WCW, ECW guys not treated as contenders. This is a problem I have with this match. DDP had already been completely botched. And same with Booker T. And these are guys who, you know, could have been, like, even more important players and made the star power even greater in this Rumble, but they were kind of just treated as afterthoughts.
Compare and contrast Kyle Ross, his treatment here, Daniel Bryan's treatment at the 2015 Rumble. Is it about the same?
Who?
Rob Van Dam? Is it about the same? We'll teach you to try and cheer for this guy.
Okay, it's a little different in the sense that Daniel, like, you knew RVD wasn't going to win here.
Right.
But they... I mean, it was also just so severe the way they cut. I mean, he, like, came in and just ate the pedigree right away and just, like, laid there for, like, a minute and just got tossed.
That's how he was in for 212, because he laid there for about 2 minutes of it.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel Bryan at least got some offense in, and he, I mean, he was a guy who legitimately could have and probably should have won. Let's talk about, because we've been kind of negative about this Rumble, a Rumble that I'm going to give 3.5 stars to, by the way.
Okay.
But let's talk about something positive in this Rumble, shall we? Okay. Let's go back to the beginning of the match, close to the beginning of the match.
Yes.
A top 10 Rumble spot ever is in this Royal Rumble.
Okay.
The Dropkick of Doom, Maven, on The Undertaker.
It's still remembered to this day.
So, heel Undertaker was dumb.
Yep.
I thought
Here
I go with the negativity again. It reminded me of, and I know you'll like this, the big Jim Crockett Promotions fan you are. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of that Road Warriors heel turn in 88.
Yep.
That in no way, shape, or form... had any effect on the crowd really cheering for the performer. Like, the Road Warriors were still getting huge babyface pops throughout that heel turn to the point that they're like, okay, we're just going to turn them back.
You see
again.
It frequently in wrestling. Another one I'll give you is the fall of 2012 CM Punk. I'm going to insult Bret Hart in Canada. I'm going to insult Jerry Lawler in Memphis. When they're going to those desperate extremes to get heat, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and in the case of Undertaker, they had him turn heel by shoving Jim Ross's face at Vince McMahon's ass.
Right.
You're right. It's stupid. And he was booked in a way. You talk about Triple H, how strong he was booked as a heel.
Right.
And, you know, Jericho wasn't, Angle wasn't, et cetera, et cetera. I'll tell you what. The way the Undertaker was booked as a heel was so head-scratching. Like, he was this just dominant heel. But he was booked in a way that made you want to cheer him. You know, like everything he did was like, oh, this guy is a badass, you know, like, and he still was getting cheered when he came out here. He totally cleaned house. It was funny. I have in my notes that when he eliminates the Hardys and the Hardys come back in to kind of like kill time and he eliminates the Hardys again.
Right.
Like the crowd was kind of booing the Hardys while they were who were faces at this time when they're attacking, which was odd. I mean, maybe
it was hard to get them booed at that time, too.
Well, you know. If you remember at the time, and not a lot of people do, they had tried splitting them up. Remember, they did that disastrous match at Vengeance in December, the only time they had wrestled against each other.
That's right.
Well, they wound up wrestling against each other like 8 years later or whatever.
Yeah.
7 years.
Only worked marginally better then.
Yeah, but I mean, that was like a disastrous match. And like they were, again, I think when they come out, like you talk about resets, Jared's like, oh my God, Team Extreme's all on the same page again with Lita.
Right.
It's nice to see them together again. It's like, there was no storyline reason given. It's like, yeah, that sucked. We're just going to put them back together.
Right.
But anyway, so Undertaker cleans house. He's dominating the match. We're hearing all about his yard. And Maven, who you may or may not remember, is the first Tough Enough winner, comes out. Like, Undertaker's all by himself, and Undertaker's, like, laughing. It's really, the psychology of it's really good. Like, Maven walks out. He's like, oh, crap, what am I doing? Like, this is terrible. I have no chance.
And I think he was Al Snow's protege at the time.
I thought was he a surprise entrant in this? I don't know if he had been hyped as being in this Rumble. But, you know, so the Undertaker gets kind of distracted with the Hardys throwing him out again. And he's just standing there. And Maven does the Dropkick of Doom, which was kind of like his one move that he did while he did a nice standing dropkick. And the pop that drew is ridiculous.
Right.
Like, it's one of those things, like, and the Undertaker sold it well. Like, when he goes over the ropes, he's like, no fucking way.
Right.
Did that just happen?
Right.
And it was so good. And my only complaint, and I think it's a pretty legitimate major complaint with the whole thing, is they, this being the WWF during this period, they immediately went to great lengths to make sure you forgot about what just happened.
Yep.
Like, there was this great moment that you could have built off of.
Yep.
There was no reason they couldn't drag that out to, like, the next pay-per-view. And Undertaker could have squashed him at No Way Out,
yep,
the February
pay-per-view. But he immediately gets his heat back. Like, throws him through a popcorn machine.
Yeah, just, like, he just drags him out and just beats the holy hell out of him. Now, I did kind of like how he buried Scotty Too Hotty. On the way, Scotty Too Hotty was dancing down like a complete tool. You know, that was one soup bone I didn't mind seeing from The Undertaker there. I hated Scotty Too Hotty, but he was like dancing like a complete knob, if I can be Mark Markerson for a moment. Undertaker just tattoos him, which I found kind of amusing. But
you know what,
the
though?
Treatment,
like,
of Maven.
Scotty Too Hotty greater than Santino Marella. I mean, if you're going to have somebody out there just to be a comedy guy, give me Scotty Too Hotty over 99% of the guys they've ever used in that function. That's just me.
Yeah, he was kind of on the. Well, I think needless to say, the downward slope of his WWE run at this point.
I want to make.
I don't even think he did it. I mean, this might have been like kind of it for him. I don't know how much longer he lasted.
I want to make a larger point about what you're saying about Taker here, because I want to go back to a criticism that you guys used to make at the time. And at one time when I was sitting with you guys on SNS about Taker and about how. At the end, you know,
who was that other co-host?
Little guy. But whether it be Mr. Kennedy or whoever, at the end of the feud, he was always the guy coming out on top, getting his arm raised. And I pointed out to you guys, and I said, well, to play devil's advocate, traditionally in wrestling, unless there are special circumstances, the face goes over at the end of the feud. I said, then again, to play devil's advocate on myself, back in 2002, the same rules applied. He was a bad guy, but he was still the guy coming out on top at the end of the feud.
Yeah, remember like
what
the way,
you're talking
like,
about
like
here.
With Ric Flair, to go back to Ric Flair, like
yeah.
Undertaker and Flair were the feud after this, then Undertaker beats him at Mania. It was like such a one-sided feud.
Because all the heat was on the actions of Taker leading up to it. At WrestleMania,
and then
was about Ric Flair getting his win back, and he doesn't get it.
Yeah, and back then, the streak was not something that was promoted.
Right.
Like, it was something JR would mention in passing.
Right.
But it was not, like, this promoted thing, like,
right.
Oh, God, The Undertaker putting that undefeated streak. A match was... I don't think they started promoting that until... Was it, like, 21 against Randy Orton, I think?
There was... I think 04 against Kane, somewhat. And even, I think in passing...
Well, that was like the return of his old character.
Right. In passing, it was 03 with Show and Albert. In passing. In passing, I think. They mentioned it just like fleetingly. But here's the thing, too.
Well, they would always mention it like in the before that, but it was never like part of the promotion.
Right.
Like up until the fact when he lost to Lesnar, it was always like, the streak. It wasn't even about like any palpable hatred between the
even
two people
Flair,
or angle.
It
was the angle was a guy is coming in to try to end the streak.
Right, because I rewatched it at one point, and they did mention it even passingly against Flair, and I think they might have even mentioned it passingly against Triple H the year before. So they knew it was there. They
but
hadn't
it wasn't
decided,
something that was protected.
But
it wasn't
deemed
not,
a moneymaker.
Yes, it was not one of the main...
Which, to be honest with you, I don't know why. Like, if you know Undertaker's 10-0 at WrestleMania, I don't know why you wait another 4 or 5 years to start capitalizing.
Well, you know, it might have gotten staler then. They may not have been able to get as much mileage out
that,
of it.
That is true. That
I
is
mean,
true.
It was not one of the focal points of the promotion
right.
up until, you know.
And I know we're
really
not
really up until 25, really. Like, that was when it really became different. That's when the
right.
first match with Michaels, when
that
it took
was
out a life
of like
its own.
Absolute next level stuff. Yeah. I'll say this, too. I know we're not here to talk Mania, but one of my favorite Mania moments ever.
Arn Spinebuster, yeah,
spine
that
buster.
Was unbelievable.
Amazing.
But anyway, so I thought this Maven thing with Undertaker was great.
I thought it was.
And Maven was not ready, but the crowd really wanted to get behind him.
Right.
And there is no reason that they could not have stretched that out to a singles match between Undertaker and Maven at No Way Out. There's
right.
no reason to not do that. Especially because, mm-hmm. like, who did the Undertaker work with at No Way Out? It was, because they had three. I think he worked against, like, Rock for, like, no reason.
Yeah, I think so.
You know? So.
Just to make it a match, basically.
Yeah, because it was two big guys that didn't have anyone else to do. Because they had, like, yeah,
right.
they had. It was a pretty stacked card. Those in the NWDB. So, there's kind of a bit of a lull in the middle of this match after The Undertaker leaves and before Steve Austin comes in
mm-hmm.
in the middle of this match.
A bit of a lull. Is it self-righteously pontificating about Cleveland sports?
No, it is not.
There's an inside
I repeated myself. I do that a lot when I write, by the way. I'll start and end with the same clause I said in the middle of the match.
Nice.
In the middle of the match. I didn't like that. Post-production. But, you know, it's funny that although it's a star-studded rumble, I think that a lot of the guys – in here. Mm-hmm. I have in my notes that it was either guys I was kind of sick of seeing.
Right.
Or that weren't being used right. We talked about the WCW, ECW guys not being treated as contenders. The Hardys weren't booked particularly well here. You know, you have your Billy and Chucks in this thing. Perry Saturn is going nowhere fast. Albert Farouk draws a paycheck here.
Here's where I'm going to say something kind of smart, Marky. You might find it to be so anyways, but not to be Captain IWC, but, you know, a lot of these guys, if they were being used better or slash had been used better over the previous year or two, maybe we're looking at a situation where it's a little closer to the 92 Rumble.
Maybe. You know, I mean,
the star power could have been greater than it was.
Every Rumble, well, it's not those guys I just gave.
I saw a lot in Perry Saturn. Maybe that's just me.
Stop it. To your point there, the failure was with guys like DDP, RVD, Booker T.
As well as Perry Saturn.
Stop it.
To a greater degree than Perry Saturn. I'll admit that.
Stop it. All right, let's get to the end. Let's get to like the main crux.
Let's not forget Test, too. That's a guy that was underutilized over the years. How do you do nothing
Test
with him?
Test was underutilized?
How do you do nothing with him coming off of the Stephanie angle? There should have been 2 or 3 months worth of pay-per-view matches with Triple H coming off of that.
Well, unfortunately, it was Mania season, and they weren't going to go with Test. And to be honest, after that, Test was dead in the water.
Bring him back. Keep him off camera for 6 months, whatever. Bring him back as a dark avenging character. There's your post-Rock feud for Triple H.
That I'll buy.
I solved it.
I'll buy it. Yep. Oh, gee, let's just pat ourselves on the back. So let's get to the kind of the finale here because we do need to talk Triple H.
Yes.
The next kind of this is one of those rumbles where there's definite, to use your word from the beginning of this mini episode.
Yeah.
Hinge points. Like there's definitely like different like segments of this rumble, and the final segment kind of comes about when it's Steve Austin and Triple H facing off. I'll make a nitpick myself. The Hurricane comes in to kind of interrupt their face-off. By the way, Triple H's entrance ate up the whole 2 minutes.
Okay.
He didn't do anything. It was just like him just kept walking so slowly. The Hurricane comes out, and it's funny. Like, you have this thing. Although Austin and Triple H were both faces at the time. They had a history, and it was the big face-off. Hurricane comes in, and you talk about good comedy. He goes for this double choke slam spot on both of them. And this was something they never used to do, and now they do all the time. Like, Triple H and Austin, the two big stars, like, stop what they're doing, look at each other, and it's like, how dare this mid-card jabroni interrupt the main event segment? And they team up. It's like, main eventers unite to keep down this jabroner. It's like, there's only one thing that can keep our hatred in check, and that's when a mid-card guy comes in and interferes with our heat. You know? Like, I didn't care for that. But otherwise...
Sounds like a real Bernie Sanders fan making that point, doesn't it?
We're going to get the White House in 2016. God damn it. But Austin and Triple H both being in this really carries it down the home stretch. Angle comes in, which is good. Mr. Perfect, he's the one nostalgic that worked in this thing because he had obviously been off for a long WWE TV for a long time. I mean, you know, people probably forgot. He actually was still active in WCW, like, into 2000. Like, he was, like, wasn't he doing something with Russo? Like, he was, like, one of Russo's henchmen that...
He was horrifically misused. It is a... testament.
Well, he got a little lazy because of the, he started hanging out with the NWO.
It wasn't peak Kurt Hennig, but the thing of it is, too, is that it is a testament to how great he could be and a testament to how great this character was that he comes out and the people are ooing and eyeing.
Big over. Well,
they didn't even care about the late 90s with him anymore.
No, he had not been on WWF TV since late 1993.
It was 1990 again as far as the people were concerned.
I wouldn't go that far, but he certainly was appreciated. So the final four is Triple H, Austin, Perfect. That's a pleasant surprise.
Right.
And Kurt Angle.
Big Show and Kane were in this thing late but didn't stick around till the end.
No, and again, it's kind of funny. Those are big names.
Right.
And they're in it combined. I'm looking at this right now. Combined for less than 4 minutes.
We talked about this previously.
It is so stunning to me that...
And coming off of the Kane mega push in the Rumble the year before. He's in for a minute and two to be eliminated by Kurt Angle. The randomness of how these guys would be booked from year to year.
Yeah, it's real head-scratching. Especially, it's funny like how some of these guys... Like in the as we go through the Rumbles, and maybe I'm misremembering here in the who's the misremember guy? That's Roger Clemens.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm misremembering, but like the more recent Rumbles, there will be guys who you know have no chance just like stay in there
right
for like ungodly amounts of time. So in the Final Four, Triple H, it does not come down to him in Austin. It comes down to Triple H and Angle, I guess, again, to cement Triple H's, hey, he's the lead babyface here.
Yep.
And he wins what is the longest Rumble ever.
Okay.
The longest Rumble ever.
Interesting.
Yeah. An hour and 9 minutes this thing went.
It's funny because...
Which is funny. It went a little bit past the time because, like, a big thing I always had, this was an issue, I think, because they were running low on time in the 90s Rumbles. Like, number 30 would come out, and the time from number 30 coming out to the end of the match was, like, way too short.
Right.
Like, that's one thing they've gotten better on.
Right.
I think it makes it more realistic is their pacing in times, you know, in the years that have followed.
Yeah, they've done a much, much better job of that. And, again, the pacing seemed to be really good here. The flow seemed to be good. Well, what's funny is that I had not, in my notes, decided on a grade for the Rumble. This is the one where I'm kind of doing it on the fly.
I have two questions for you.
I'm doing it on the fly sitting here. I just kind of figured that as I'm reliving watching it with you, because, again, I watched it a while ago. I thought that we might be doing these a little bit quicker. So I watched this a while ago. It's not yet stale in my mind, but I figured I would kind of give this a grade on the fly. I'm going to say a tie with 2001, 4.25 stars, slotting it.
You're just you know, you called me the generous girl. You're more generous than me on all these.
And it's behind 1992, which is 4.5 stars, ahead of 2000, which is 4 stars. So at this point, three of the four greatest Rumbles of all time, I have 2000 to 2002, the era that we're covering here.
You give 98 like 4.25 too?
I gave 98, 4 stars as well. That's tied. 99, 3.25 stars.
Which is preposterous.
A sneaky good Rumble, Kyle Ross. You don't like
second worst ever.
You don't like some of the Angle stuff to it, but that's not a reason,
heinous,
I don't think, to condemn the entire Rumble. I don't.
1.5 stars.
No, I think by and large, when we get right down to it, if we add up the star numbers, yours are going to be higher than mine all the way through here, because throughout the 90s, by and large, I think yours were generally higher than mine were, generally. And in the 2000s, everything from here on in, you'll probably be higher than me every single year. So you're going to be, your numbers are going to be way higher than mine.
Can I give my star rating?
No, go ahead.
Thank
yeah.
you, sir. Thank yeah,
you. Didn't you
please
say before?
Andy Rooney?
You said it before, didn't
oh,
you?
Oh, did I? I forget things. I just babble someone can
it
hear.
It was 3-something.
Well, 3.5.
3.5. Okay.
I thought this was, to me, slightly down from the previous year.
Slightly down.
I thought there were some nitpick, as you could tell. I didn't have a lot of complaining to do about the previous year. My only complaining was like Drew Carey and like the ECW hardcore goofiness. This one, I thought there was some more legitimate gripes. So I'll give it 3.5, which again makes it so far to me one of the highest Rumbles I've ever given. I've only given two Rumbles to this point. Well, you've got all these ones at 4 and higher.
Mm-hmm.
I've only given two Rumbles higher than 3.5 stars, that being 2001, 3.75. And this is where,
yeah, but you're going to be Mark Markerson for the modern era, where I'm not going to be.
You'll be surprised.
Don't
ever try to pigeonhole me, pal. And I gave 92 the full 5, which obviously is going to inflate my numbers.
Here's
my snowflakes.
Here's the funny thing. I kind of backed myself into a corner because I like it a little better than 2001, but 92 is 4.5 stars. So I know I can't give this 4.375 stars, so I don't want to put it on a level with 92. But I wanted to put it higher than 01. Given a choice between the two, I will put it on a level with 01.
So what you're saying is you're not very good with the star rating system.
I didn't pace myself on that as well. It's sort of like being at a Chinese buffet. Historically, I've not always paced myself very well.
I'm painstakingly, like, I'll, like, go back and, like, redo everything to have it on the proper curve. So I know where I'm going generally with all these star ratings.
Okay.
So, yeah, this was 3. But, yeah, again, I thought this was... This is, like, definitely a top 10 run, like, knowing where I'm going with the rest of them.
Right.
This is going to be, like, a top 10 Rumble. It's not top 5 all
right.
time, but it's a top 10 Rumble for me and a very good show. But I have one more question for you.
Okay.
The show did very well.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about 670,000 buys. Triple H, strong babyface coming in, focal point of the promotion for the show. Why did it not work moving forward? Because as we know, the way the story goes, he wins the title at WrestleMania from Jericho. And, you know, with the Hogan curveball coming in, he kind of loses the title right after that. Maybe that hurt him, but I think Triple H, despite the fact the crowd was ready to get behind him, isn't a very good babyface. Unless if the crowd's given a reason. Like with the angle thing, the whole thing that like, a guy's kind of hitting on his wife. Mm-hmm. That's going to get male fans to, you know, like it's one of those things that triggers. Like, yeah, I'd kick somebody's ass if they're hitting on my wife too. But there was no real reason given. And I'm going to submit, this is, I know you loved a fantasy book, and I've kind of thought, what could they have done? Because I don't really like WrestleMania 18, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I think it's a subpar show as far as WrestleManias go. It's a one-match show, and sadly, that involves Hulk Hogan. But they should have just done Austin Triple H as the main event of that show, baby first versus baby face mm-hmm. going in. And, again, a lot of benefit of hindsight for me in this when I say it, but they should have been able to figure out, at least on the day of WrestleMania 18, that Hogan was – the money in him was going to be – or not money, but his future was going to be as a babyface. He was mm-hmm. going to get cheered. It should have been the click, because they bring Michaels back, in case you forgot, after WrestleMania and X-Pac, they wanted him involved. The click should have reunited and helped Triple H – beat Austin at WrestleMania. It could have been a heel. Because I bitched at WrestleMania 16 about a heel going over, and 17, Austin's heel turn. That would have been a time where, yeah, you know, I would have gone with a heel. Triple H as a heel. And then you could have had Hogan as his challenger. And there would have been more. Because Triple H as a face versus Hogan as a face was terrible. Weren't they like posing together at one point? Oh, God.
They were. After Triple H lost, no less. Here's an interesting note. You asked me what I thought about that, and then proceeded to answer it all yourself completely here. So,
if I may, with my side of it,
I like yours. Your side of it's very good. I don't find much to disagree with in your theory here. I do think, and here I've always said, Backlash 02, the question was settled in the ring on who was the single greatest politician of all time.
Yes.
I give it to Hogan over Triple H because he went over that night.
Yes.
But here's the thing. Here's how great Triple H is. This is, I don't know if he's been studying the art of war or whatever. He probably has because he's very, very good. Sometimes the greatest strength is in humility. Okay, so if your fiance is in charge of creative at that time and your babyface run falls apart, what's the smart thing to do politically? Fall on your sword and admit publicly to, you know, I'm just not such a great baby face.
Yeah.
I fault the booking a lot more than I fault him because he had that momentum behind him.
Oh, I agree.
We saw subsequently.
Oh, I agree. I'm not saying that Triple H stunk as a performer.
98 Triple H. 06 Triple H. We've seen Triple H is a much better face than he looked like in 02. He rarely had to deal with the crappy booking that he had to deal with in the lead up to WrestleMania.
You're right. I think that. And, you know, I can't really remember that, like, 07, 08 period that well offhand.
When he was the lead face and champion on SmackDown, and I think it was 08, he did a pretty good job
there. Okay, well, I think we'll agree on this then. This is my point. This was his weakest face run.
Sure.
Of
but I blame the booking.
Three that he had.
But he's smart enough to know I can't throw stuff under the bus. I have to be the magnanimous one and say it wasn't the booking, it was me.
Yeah. Well, I'm just
brilliant.
Saying, you serve a lot of, and not to put myself over, but I think my way mm-hmm. serves a lot of masters. One, inserting Austin into the main event picture.
Right.
Keeps him a little happy. Now, he wouldn't do a job because he was getting a little ornery during that time period.
That was about before he left in the summer.
Yeah. And, you know, although he had been damaged, his brand, I hate using that word, but his brand had been damaged by the heel run in 01.
Right.
He was booked pretty crappy. I mean, to waste Steve Austin in a match with Scott Hall at WrestleMania. And
right.
Actually, the original idea was for him to lose.
It was.
Can you believe that?
Here's the funny thing.
What idiot would be like, you know what I'm going to do at WrestleMania? Have Scott Hall beat Steve Austin.
We talked about this in the last segment that we did on the Rumble. Here's the irony. Is that I said that Austin was maybe like in early 01 coming in off of the injury that he was maybe like still 85% of peak Austin, which was not nearly lukewarm enough for a heel turn. At this point, he's maybe 70% of Austin, but still, he still couldn't have gone back to being a red hot face in the summer of 02. The difference between where he was at this point and Hogan and WCW 94 to 96, it was still a canyon of difference. Austin was still way hotter than Hogan was on his best day in WCW.
Yeah, I'd agree
which
with
is kind of funny.
And more importantly, he was hotter and more over than Jericho was. The only way that Jericho Triple H would have worked is the WrestleMania main event.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, I mean, that match was obviously hurt by going on after Hogan Rock,
right?
Which was what everyone saw as the true main event. But had Jericho been the guy to go to WCW all along, like at the beginning, like had they remember Jericho was wrestling Austin at King of the Ring,
right?
When the Invasion angle started, Booker T made his first kind of not his first TV appearance, but his first storyline appearance. He attacked Austin that match.
That's right.
If Jericho had won that match with help from WCW, and you know, we could have it could have eventually led to, by God, this all goes back to 99 when Jericho first came here. And because Jericho had the WCW history, he hadn't been treated well upon entering the WWF, and maybe was kind of viewed still as a WCW guy. If he was the lead heel of this invasion, if you did, and again, ideally, you pay the big stars from WCW to come over, but if you don't want to do that, then Jericho, I thought, would have been a better. Although he's not as big a name or star as Austin, he would have been better in that role. It would have been better. Turning Steve Austin heel is just so it's such a disaster.
That it was.
Anyone else is the lead heel. So unless if you would have had that and booked Jericho strong throughout 01, going into Mania, and Triple H sort of being the returning conquering Avenger on the WWF side of things, that's the only way the Jericho-Triple H pairing would have worked. The whole insertion of Stephanie, you know, her with Jericho, that dynamic didn't work. No one bought it. It was just awful. And they didn't do him any favors by, like, picking up poop, obviously.
Well, yeah.
But it didn't work. So the damage had been done on Jericho already by this point. You should have just gone with Austin Triple H. That would have been a bigger name main event, and it would have served a lot of masters.
Short of your idea, something that wouldn't have been as daring would have been the same dynamic as what they were doing, but I think a more effective way than jamming Jericho in there for his first run on top. What if instead of Jericho, if it was Angle, and you had Triple H Angle, finally the match to settle things between them, this goes back a couple of years, that would have been stronger. Kurt Angle, at that point, would have been a stronger champion than Jericho, I think.
Ah, 6-1, half a dozen of the other.
You don't think he would have been stronger?
The reason they didn't do it is we had just seen Angle as the transitional champion the year before. So they were like, all right, well, let's go with a different transitional champion.
Yeah, but he didn't make it to Mania. This year he does. By God, I'm not a transitional champion this year. See?
Yeah.
You don't think so?
Yeah.
Okay.
I still think it would have been flat because everyone would have bought the champion as transitional. I think that, again, it was weak and made worse by the booking, but I really just don't. And again, you know, there are certain matches that have worked where everyone knows the outcome's inevitable.
Right.
You know, like, obviously, no one should have or could have thought that Shawn Michaels was going to go over Steve Austin at WrestleMania 14.
Right.
But Michaels was a big enough star that the dynamic still worked.
That's right.
Jericho just, you know, he was a guy who I guess was probably happy to be the champion going into WrestleMania. And, you know, unlike Austin, who would have probably pitched a bitch about losing, and they would have had to placate him, and that's kind of where I came up with that click idea.
Okay.
You know, Jericho's like, yeah, screw it, I'll walk into WrestleMania as champion, I'll job clean, who cares? And they're like, oh, okay, problem solved.
Right.
So.
Well, very, very, very interesting. And this goes full circle to how we started this. When you get to the woulda, coulda, shouldas on alternate kind of ideas, and in terms of 2002 being one of those rare hinge years in the history of wrestling, and again, I don't know that anything was going to bring back the boom. I have always maintained that I saw the end of the boom with my own two eyes the queue at Invasion in 2001. I swear to God that's where it was when Austin turned again, when nobody wanted him to turn. Or it was a fake face turn, the pseudo face turn. He turns, he joins the Alliance. I thought that was the end, well and truly the end of the boom period.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that show beat SummerSlam, which is shocking for a quote-unquote B show to beat SummerSlam.
Shouldn't have done, well, it was a supercharged B show in that it was the first ever quote-unquote invasion, but I know what you're saying. So, SummerSlam should have built on the momentum.
Well, no, that just shows how bad of an idea the doubling down on the Austin heel turn was.
Right.
Because you're coming off the most successful non-top four pay-per-view ever.
Right.
And then SummerSlam is a weaker number. That's
right.
Damning. That's damning of what they were doing.
I mean, and sometimes it's not all about reclaiming what you got. Sometimes it's about arresting the slide. And when we get to the next segment of this, when we get to 2003, I think we're going to see this, that the ideas that we're talking about of 02, things they did, things they didn't do coming out of the Royal Rumble, 2002, which, again, save for some stuff in the fall, on SmackDown. 2002 was an armpit year.
Well, and SummerSlam, I think it was the best SummerSlam ever.
It was.
There was that period. But again, they had so many talented.
But the booking for most of those matches still sucked, though. I mean,
yes.
Here's the funny thing. We talked about it with the Rumble. In isolation, an outstanding Royal Rumble show. SummerSlam 02 in isolation.
You know, that's more. I thought the Rock Lesnar build was tremendous. For 02.
Okay, for that match.
And Triple H HBK was good, too.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to save you.
But you go down the show, though.
No.
Come on. Everything,
they just had a lot of good workers on that show, too. Here's the thing. I'm going to save you, and I'll bring us together.
Okay.
I don't need you if you need saving. But
all
maybe.
Right. Well, go ahead.
The booking overall in 02 and then in 03
right.
generally is pretty awful.
And that's the thing. We're saying
they had enough talented guys to stay at a certain level.
Right.
And by bad booking, I mean they just had so many talented guys that they were misusing.
Right.
Like, you can't even compare it to, like, the bad booking of today where, like, none of the guys are really just over.
Right.
Or, you know, yeah, there's some talented guys, but there's no.
Although, as workers, the workers of today are comparable, you know, are better than a lot of the eras.
Let's be a little careful. Overall, the average worker might be really good, but on today's roster, you don't have the Angles, the Jerichos, the Benoits,
right.
Guerreros, et cetera, et cetera. In addition to the big names of Austin, Rock, Triple H, Undertaker.
Right.
You just don't have that dynamic at all. So
you still have Kane and the Big Show, surprisingly.
We will. Yes. Yeah. So when we get to part five, then, which starts with 2003, I'm calling it Split Happens.
Okay.
That part will be a long part. I believe it will be our longest part of any.
03 to 07?
Yep.
Well, we started out 88 to 92, so
okay.
That'll be a tie. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, five parts.
Okay,
all right.
Very good.
Okay.
Good enough. Okay, sure. But anyway, until I was so rudely interrupted. There's a lot to cover. In 88, though, you know, not a real pay-per-view show. So
right.
So how about that? How about how I work my way out of that paper bag? I think there's a lot to cover there, and we will be going in-depth about the brand extension.
Ugh.
And the many fails of it.
Yep.
There were some pros that it led to. We'll talk about those, but there are much more missteps than there are successes throughout the brand extension. And we'll talk about it because it's certainly a different dynamic. It's a clear line of demarcation when you've got Raw and SmackDown being treated as separate and for a very, very small period of time, equal brands.
I'll leave you on this note. Back in 2002. All right. Everybody that thinks they have a deep enough roster to be able to split it in two, step forward. Not so fast, Vince McMahon.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classics, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.